everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John, who is engineering and producing our program. We are off and running as we transition this week into February already. Today is Monday, the 29th of January, 2024. We celebrated the start of our 14th year with the radio show in early January, and my 36th year now in Tucson Media. We come to you from the Bustos, growing Bustos Media presence here in Tucson, 5 radio stations under one roof now. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio, and the radio station is 1030 KVOI, The Voice, Tucson's only source now for local news and talk. We have our worldwide live listening and all of our podcasts available for you. A lot of content is archived, actually, from the first week that we started doing the show in January of 2011. It's all there for you at buckmastershow.com. Our live line for our telephone interviews, presented by our friends at Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. It's time for our Monday one-on-one, presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe specializes in custom frame mirrors, art for your walls. Moe's a fantastic photographer, and they have a lot of his work available for sale at the gallery. And picture framing, of course, that's where they really excel. Hanging services and hanging systems, that means Moe will come out to your home, make sure that whatever you had framed will go up on the wall the way you want it and where you want it. You don't have to worry about getting up on the ladder and making sure it's straight. Moe takes care of all that. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge at moesgallery.com. They're also right next to that Monsoon Chocolate, which has opened up and is doing very well in that area there on Fort Lowell. All right, our Monday one-on-one today features Tucson Metro Chamber's Vice President of Business Advocacy. He's Zach Yenzer. And Zach manages local business advocacy, workforce development initiatives, and strategic communications. He served as the executive director of the Tucson Young Professionals for the past 4 years. Under his leadership, both membership and financial resources increased by about 1,000%. He fostered over 30 corporate partnerships, elevated the brand of the Tucson Young Professionals, expanded the staffing and services, and set the foundation for advocacy, philanthropy, and greater impact moving forward. Zach's an old friend to KVOI, had a talk show here called Tipping Point for about 5 years. He's also a former candidate for Tucson mayor, and it's my pleasure to welcome Zach back to our station, and specifically my show. Hey, Zach, how are you?
Bill, I'm good. It's good to see you. Good to be back in studio. It's
still
a little strange being on this side of the table. That hasn't worn off.
No.
I'm very happy you're in that seat.
Yes.
I'll say that.
Yeah, there you go. So how is the new job going? You joined the chamber in the middle of last summer. What was envisioned for you? What was your role going to be and has turned out to be?
I'm having a blast. It's been about 6 months, and I've told people who've asked, it really has come to feel like my last 10 years of work in Tucson all in one role. And you mentioned I get to support our business advocacy and community and government affairs work, our workforce development initiatives, as well as strategic communication. So whether it was my work with TYP, around workforce development there, or radio communications here, or my community work around housing, economic development, so on and so forth in the community, and many other things. Now it's all in one role under one house. So I'm really enjoying it. And we at the chamber really sat down last summer and had some conversation around, if we had to look at where Tucson is today, a phrase that really sums it up is that the old Pueblo is facing new big city challenges. Mm-hmm. And that requires a different work and different approach from all of us, but certainly at the chamber to meet those challenges. And I know we'll talk in a bit about what those challenges were that we heard from business, but we really see that advocacy side of the house on behalf of our members when it comes to our communications, when it comes to our workforce development efforts. All that is to help represent our members around the issues where they say the old Pueblo is facing new big city challenges, and we need to address those issues and address them at scale. And my role is to help shape that policy, represent our members, and communicate about it out in the community.
You know, we talk about the old Pueblo, and I know you had many radio shows where you talked about the fact that, you know, the moniker for Tucson is kind of backward looking. It isn't kind of, it is backward looking when you say old Pueblo. But, you know, we are in a, we're, you know, 21st century. We've got to move forward.
You know, the challenge is that even just a few years ago, we looked at other communities around the country and said, well, we don't have those challenges. We now are facing them here in Tucson as we grow. Issues around housing affordability, issues around talent retention, issues around homelessness and public safety. You know, we've seen, for example, a 300% increase in unsheltered homelessness between 2018 and 2023. There was a lot of things in Tucson that we're not seeing those challenges that other bigger cities were facing. As we've grown, we're now facing them. So we have to look to the future, and we have to be collaborative about it.
When you did this listening tour, I believe you went across all five Pima County districts. What were people telling you? What were some of the business owners telling you? What do they consider to be the major problems and and moving forward?
We did. Last October, we took the show on the road, as they said, and we asked five of our member businesses to host some conversations, and we are able to break down our membership across those five districts and said, look, we're coming your way, and we want to know what the challenges are in District 3. We want to know what keeps you up at night as a business in District 1, whatever the case may be. And we had some really good conversations with our member businesses, and I was surprised to find out that as open-ended as we kept the conversation, what keeps you up at night, what keeps you up in the morning as a small, medium, or even large-sized business owner in Tucson, that the top six issues were the same across those five conversations, across the five districts. And, you know, I kind of thought that they might be a little bit different.
Yeah.
You know, District 3 can be very rural.
Yeah.
You know, District 5 can be very urban. But I was surprised that without any prompting, our business owners and members said, we want the chamber to really plant the flag on these issues. And I can give you those six.
Yeah, I want to hear
six,
about them.
Those six really quick.
What are they?
The need for a more proactive agenda at scale for tackling the crisis of homelessness. Businesses are often on the front lines of some of the challenges surrounding homelessness when our solutions are not meeting that need at scale. A more proactive agenda and influence on housing affordability. It was interesting, Bill, to hear business owners say the ability for my employees to afford housing in Tucson is impactful because I'm not sure that I can have my wages grow fast enough to meet cost of living. If I can't do that, then my employees may not stick around the company, and that's a talent challenge. Continued advocacy, Bill, for transportation and infrastructure, the need for good roads, good parks, the need for us to have a good regional transportation authority for the next 20 years. We continue to hear, Bill, the desire for a good workforce development strategy. A lot of companies are saying it's hard for me to find and keep talent in Tucson. Crime and public safety is another area where we continue to hear from our business owners that they want the chamber to be active and continue to be active on that issue. Many of these, by the way, Bill, we have been, but it really is good to come away and go, these are the six themes that set our public policy agenda for 2024. And then last but not least, our businesses said we want an economy where we have strong wages across the spectrum. We want to see a strong, innovative economy. We want to see an economy where if you are working in the food and restaurant industry, that your wages are good and strong. A real desire to see a healthy, diverse economy in that way. So when we heard from our members those same six themes, we said, well, we did this because we want to shape our public policy work at the Chamber in 2024 around what our members tell us are the issues most concerning to them, which is what we've done.
All right, Zach Yenser is here from the Metro Chamber, Tucson Metro Chamber. Zach's Vice President of Business Advocacy. This is our Monday one-on-one, and we'll kind of dig into these couple of these, maybe all six of them. We can kind of hit on where do we go from here. That's kind of my theme. We started talking about the old Pueblo, talking about old. What about what's Tucson of the 21st century? Where are we going with Tucson in the new Pueblo, if you will? Zach Yenser sticks around. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is our title sponsor, glad they are, of our Monday one-on-one. We do this every Monday and bring in, take a deep dive with a newsmaker. Also want a big shout-out to Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. I was up at Mona's over the weekend. Nice crowd, as usual. Always a big crowd on Saturday and Sunday at Mona's. They do take Monday off. Their hours 6:30 in the morning. They open the doors Tuesday through Sunday, and they do have the liquor license, and I don't think they're quite ready to launch in with the mimosas, the champagne and orange juice in the morning with breakfast, but it's coming very soon. All right, we'll take a break right here. More with Zach Yenser after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Zach Yenser is with us, Vice President of Advocacy, Business Advocacy for the Metro Tucson Chamber. And we've been talking with Zach on our Monday one-on-one presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing about they did this listening tour across all five Pima County districts, the county districts correlating with the Pima County Supervisors districts. And all six issues were the same in each district. Why don't we hit on some of these? Let's begin with the big one that, on the homelessness issue, Zach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, a framing for this is a recent survey of those on the streets experiencing what they call unsheltered homelessness. And it's important to phrase it that way. Some call it chronic. There are those experiencing short-term homelessness that may be economic, maybe because of rent went really high. And then you see, for example, seniors on the street who are on the street for the first time, and it's incredibly sad. Equally as sad, but a different layer of this challenge is unsheltered or chronic homelessness. And we have seen, as I mentioned, a 300% increase in unsheltered homelessness between 2018 and 2023. A recent survey of that community in Pima County showed that I think 60% are struggling with mental health, 80% with substance abuse. And so we have to engage those underlying issues and have to provide a lot more shelter at scale than we have been. And businesses are often on the front lines of experiencing what happens when we have a growing community that is unhoused and struggling with substance abuse and mental health. So we have really a 3-point policy direction that we as the chamber want to advocate for, along with partners in the community, for addressing that.
You want to talk about some of the points?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, first of all, we believe that we need to rapidly expand the amount of interim shelter that's available to allow for at-scale opportunities to ensure that mental health and substance abuse treatment is available for all who need it. And then graduating out of that, any permanent or supportive housing that is available in our community can then be applicable. And, you know, one example of this around the country is what they did in Reno. It was a countywide effort to really create a one-stop place where there was about 600 beds, and they were able to provide those who are unsheltered with that opportunity. And then from there, when you had that critical mass of people being served, then you can tackle the mental health and substance abuse treatment, behavior health that is underneath it. One of the challenges that we face in Tucson is that we are under currently a Ninth Circuit Court ruling that prevents cities like Tucson from enforcing urban camping ordinances until there is proof that there's enough shelter available.
Zach, why don't we talk about the crime issue? And top of the list, when these business owners talk about crime, they're concerned with the retail theft issue. I hear it all the time. I go to the pharmacy, and the people saying at CVS, even Walgreens, the big stores, that people will come in and they just leave. They'll, you know, grab and go. What can be done?
Yeah. You know, through our coalition against retail theft, we are trying to influence policy and bring retailers together to do really the three things that will seem to make a big difference, not only here, but across the country. We try to bring together, and we do, businesses and government for information sharing among local businesses, law enforcement, and policymakers. Something that we see happening really well up in Maricopa is the county attorney in Maricopa Does a really good job of bringing all the jurisdictions together. And here it would be Marana and Oro Valley and Sahuarita and Vail and Tucson really communicating and not just saying, well, this instance happened here, but the same perpetrator is doing it all over. You can really have crime detection and response efforts quick in there. And that leads to number two, aggregate offenses to punish repeat offenders. When there is that knowledge going regionally of what is happening in terms of retail theft, offenses can be aggregated and appropriate offenses can be dealt. And when we talk about organized retail theft, we're not talking about kind of the one-off circumstances, you know, a bag of chips here, mm-hmm. a Coke there.
No.
They are what they call fences, massive, often interstate reams of people who are arranging local retail theft. And it's really unfortunate because many people who are involved in it are doing it to maintain habits out on the street. And it's really sad. And it's a human condition that we have to engage as well. And then we want to continue to work with our local county attorney and others to prosecute aggressively. There is a position at the Pima County Attorney's Office around retail theft, an attorney specifically to tackle these challenges. We want to see that position filled, and we want to see appropriate legal repercussions for this activity. So those are three things that we month to month bring people together to make happen here in Pima County.
We'll have Laura Conover, the Pima County attorney, on our Friday Focus interview this week, and I'll be asking her about that retail theft issue and what her office is, how they're viewing it. That'll be on Friday.
Great.
Zach, what about free transit? Is there a link to shoplifting?
There is and there can be in a couple of different ways. And, you know, the chamber has employers who benefit from all different transportation modes and infrastructure. So we want to see a smart, safe, and accessible, you know, transit system. But we do hear from retailers and businesses in our Coalition Against Retail Theft who do let us know that often property and retail crime can be supported by a transit system where currently the ease of access, there's no passes, there's no fees, and that when our transit system is often the destination rather than a means to get to a destination, that it can be a tool in the toolbox for those engaged in retail theft. Another connection as well is that we are hearing from retailers and businesses that our bus stops are becoming more and more environments that can congregate negative activity. And when you think about those out in front of businesses mm-hmm. and homes, if yeah. you're not managing some of those underlying issues, it can spin out of control really quick.
And free transit is going to be on the council agenda. Have you taken a stand at the Metro Chamber? That's coming up, I believe, next week.
Well, last year, when this got renewed, we were engaged and we remain engaged. You know, the growing concern that I think a lot of the community has is that we are facing a $13 million shortfall in fiscal year 24 from not having a fare system, F-A-R-E. And there's been some efforts to try and get alternative funding for fare-free transit that have failed. And so we're looking at future budget cycles where there is not a designated source for funding that massive shortfall. So those three things we'll continue to advocate around. We want to see a transit system that is smart financially, that is safe, and that is accessible. And so going into next week, we'll certainly advocate our position. And I think ours and many of our members' concerns is that the current way we are doing our transit system does not meet those three objectives. And we want them to, and we think they can be with good policy.
Zach Yenzer is with us, Vice President for Advocacy at the Metro Chamber. One thing that you've talked about for years on your radio show is affordable housing. What is affordable housing, Zach?
Well, at the Chamber and many other people smarter than us that talk about it in terms of housing accessibility mm-hmm. or housing affordability, and that is the ability for there to be, whether you're looking for the technical definition of affordable housing or workforce housing or market rate housing, and yes, even luxury, that there is sufficient availability to meet demand across that entire spectrum. And so we see our best lane on that is working as we've done for, decades around the land use permitting and regulatory process. So we have a monthly meeting with Planning and Development Services, for example, at the city of Tucson. We have great rapport with their counterpart in the county to really make sure that our zoning, that our regulatory process, that all the pieces of making more housing happen is happening faster and faster. And that we are not limiting the appropriate growth we need to supply more housing. But we are short in all of those categories. And for example, affordable housing, I'll end with this on this topic, is the technical definition is below 80% of area median income.
Mm-hmm.
So housing for folks who make that income is called affordable housing. We're 60 to 70,000 units of that housing short today in Pima County. And up to now, there's been some really cool projects that put in 10, 20, 60, but there drops in the buckets.
Yeah.
And where the chamber comes in, Bill, too, is as one housing advocate said, a big piece of the solution is to see wages increase and see good jobs and good wages in Pima County, so people have more money in their pocket to afford housing. So we got to work in both directions.
How is the chamber's membership going? Are you growing?
We are. We have about 1,400 members now. There's about 150,000 people who are involved in those 1,400 businesses. And, you know, we're a metro chamber and get to work with partners all across the region to see a strong Tucson metropolitan area. And are proud to be an advocacy organization that goes to bat for our members and making Tucson a place where businesses thrive and our community prospers.
Zach, do you want to give a quick website for the chamber?
Absolutely. Yeah. Please go to TucsonChamber.org. We've got some great events and gatherings coming up. We are a connector and a champion of business and businesses doing well in Tucson. And we're also a change maker, as I said, on the advocacy side. And so you'll see all that reflected on our website.
Zach Yanser. Thanks, Zach.
Thanks, Bill.
Zach is our Monday one-on-one guest, presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lawn Dodge. Be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. We love Green Things. One of our great sponsors, Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. 13-acre site, everything you need for your garden. And boy, with the weather, looking pretty good. Almost yesterday I was out doing a little gardening and the thermometer said, which is in the shade, almost 80 degrees. So, I mean, I'm not complaining. I'll save the complaints for the summer when things really start skyrocketing. GreenThingsAZ.com. And their sister business is ZocaloVillage.com. All that wonderful, beautiful imported items, a lot of pottery from Mexico, Latin America, even some European imports as well, ZocaloVillage.com. When we do our telephone interviews, which we will be doing momentarily, that is presented by our friends at Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line, Pima County Supervisor Dr. Matt Hines. Dr. Hines, how are you?
Doing well, Bill. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you for asking. Tucson Medical Center, where you are a hospitalist, was quoted widely in a major story in the Arizona Republic talking about the situation with emergency rooms in the state of Arizona. Extremely busy ERs.
Absolutely.
In fact, TMC was the busiest ER in southern Arizona, one of the busiest in the state. And we're hearing from ER doctors, according to that report in the Republic, that this is busier than during the pandemic, Matt Hines.
That's right.
What's going on? What is happening?
You know, it's a lot of things. Of course, this is the time of year we have a lot of visitors from other places who bring themselves, which is great, but also, you know, sometimes some unwanted guests like influenza, other respiratory illnesses. COVID hasn't gone away. I'm still admitting patients to the hospital who have significant enough respiratory symptoms due to COVID infections that they need oxygen and need to be brought into the hospital. Nothing like the pandemic, of course, in terms of the numbers, but it's the time of year when we have to deal with respiratory viruses. We have a lot more people in the area just because of the season. The GEM show is upon us. That also is now going to contribute a bit to that, but I think it's a lot of things. And frankly, the patients we're seeing are more complicated than ever I've seen before in my career. And we are, part of that is because we continue to be doing pretty well at keeping people alive, you know. So you just have a lot more people with many more chronic illnesses. Some of them are related to, you know, the effects after having COVID, by the way. But whether it's dialysis or chronic heart disease issues, on top of that, they can get an pneumonia or a respiratory situation or have a bleeding ulcer. So it's a lot of different things together. But certainly it's something that I've seen as a hospital physician working closely with my emergency room colleagues. It's overwhelming. And you end up with, as we've discussed before, a lot of my patients that I admit anywhere from a dozen to maybe, you know, 15, 16, depending on the night. Half of those at the end of my shift are still sitting in the ER, even though I've asked for a bed hours and hours and hours before. And that's not just my hospital, as you know. That's all of the hospitals we're seeing that statewide, especially Southern Arizona as well.
At one point on January 8th, Dr. Hines, 150 patients were holding in emergency departments waiting for an inpatient bed in hospitals in Tucson. There is a term in the business, in your business, it slips my mind right now, but this is pretty common, I guess.
It is, and one of the ways, I don't know if it's the term you're thinking about, what we do say, you know, boarding.
Yes,
right.
Like
they're inpatient. I have admitted them. They're, for example, having a heart attack, or they're having a GI bleed from a stomach ulcer or something. They need to be monitored closely in hospital, and they have had a bed request from their admitting physician, like me, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12 hours before, and they're still. And it's not the fault. This isn't the fault of the hospital. This isn't the fault of the emergency provider. It's not the fault of the hospitalist. This is just the situation we find ourselves in. So, but yeah, I thank my patients and apologize for the wait. And their patients, and they're for the most part, they're understanding. They know that we aren't trying to do this. It's just sort of the circumstance we're in. But it's still frustrating for everybody.
Yeah, there was a case of a patient was boarded in the emergency room for 73 hours. You know, that's almost 3 days. That's really unbelievable.
It is, and it's not. Not only is it not optimal, it's just not safe for anybody. It's you know, the emergency department is designed to quickly assess, triage, right? So the people that are the most severely ill, we address as quickly as possible, of course. Those who have, you know, urgent situations, but maybe not life-threatening or as life-threatening, they're a little bit later. But, you know, in a number of hours, you should be able to get through what you need to get through with any particular person in case. And then have them dispositioned, meaning they're safe to go home with follow-up with their own physician. They are, God forbid, a terrible situation. Maybe they've expired and that's a disposition to the morgue. Or, not safe to go home, but they can go out to like a rehabilitation facility. That can be done from the ER as well. They don't need to be inpatient with me. Or a lot of them come in to me. Heart attack, GI bleeding, respiratory issues like COVID or pneumonia requiring oxygen. Those come into the hospital. So that is just, it's difficult to do all of that when the boarding patients are gumming things up, right? You have a lot of my admitted patients just sitting in the ER taking up half or more of those ER bays therefore people are just sitting in the lobby. In fact, a lot of patients recently, I've been called on by ER providers in a little paging application I have for my phone that says, please call. This is the patient's name. Their location is lobby. Like, wait, what?
Lobby.
And like, I'm not used to having the ER doctors trudge out into the lobby and just kind of, you know, hi,
yeah.
Hi, Mrs. Johnson. So it's a tumor. Like, what, in front of your 50 of your best friends? That's not very good HIPAA, you know, but it is what it is. And I'm not trying to fault anybody. This is where we're at. But I've had to literally admit patients from the lobby waiting for a bay in the ER to then have a landing pad from which to admit them to one of the beds in the hospital.
Oh my goodness.
It is, you know, and it's not just TMC, it's all hospitals statewide, and frankly, I mean, nationally, the trend is the same.
And we need to talk about some of the root causes here, Dr. Matt Hines, Pima County Supervisor, and certainly it's the shortage of doctors is part of the problem, primarily...
And nurses.
You have primary care doctors retiring all over the country, the aging out of the primary care doctor. I don't know if this is in med schools, that's just an area that younger docs don't want to go into for financial reasons or whatever it is, but we've got a crisis in this country that is developing that is already playing out, Dr. Hines, up in Ontario in Canada, where one of the major health providers, this is just in the news the last day or so, has taken at least 10,000 people off their rolls of a major health care provider because they cannot cover them with doctors.
Wow. Not surprised. And that is true. You know, baby boomers aren't just patients, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they are also on the provider side. And that doesn't just mean a physician. That could be a nurse practitioner. That could be a physician assistant. And that could absolutely be a nurse. Our nursing shortage is actually, in Arizona, is actually even more severe than the physician and mid-level shortage as well. So this is true. And it's something that, and when you don't have proper staffing, then you end up in situations where hospitals have to do this very expensive temporary agency agency nurses who come in from all over, and the rates they have to pay to get them are not quite COVID, pandemic level rates, but still very, very expensive for our hospitals to do, and it's unsustainable. So, in fact, when we say, if the ER says, all right, you're stable to go, get out and you can go home, you can follow up with your primary care, or here, we're going to try to help you make an appointment with a specialist, it can be weeks and weeks and weeks because, as we've been described. So it's part of the problem as well.
I'm telling you, and I'm probably telling you something you already know, this system is broken on a lot of levels. And the CDC, their report shows one reason that healthcare workers are getting out of the business, the mental health issues. Medical institutions have not addressed the mental health of their workers. That was one of the conclusions recently of the CDC.
I agree. It's incredibly stressful, and it's something that, we're used to being in situations where literally life and death, it wasn't just the pandemic, it was before that. We're always in situations where at any given moment, while you're covering a particular ward, someone's heart could stop. They could have a massive heart attack. You could have to call a code and be, doing chest compressions or helping out the staff that are doing that kind of response. So we all are used to those kinds of, being adrenalized more than maybe other professions, and that's fine. But being so continuously adrenalized every minute of every hour of every shift, that's not really healthy for anybody, and it really does kind of degrade our ability to maintain this.
All right, Pima County Supervisor Matt Hines, stick around. Got a couple of county issues for you. Put on your supervisor's hat for me. After we take a break, it's Buckmaster on the final Monday of January. Be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Whether you've considered an all-inclusive luxury cruise, an expedition adventure, or a relaxing river cruise, come to Bon Voyage Travel's annual showcase on March 3rd at the Hilton El Conquistador. Presentations will be offered throughout the day to provide you a chance to hear more about these travel brands and their exciting offers. Bill Buckmaster and I will be teaming up to present the travel trends of 2024. Visit bvtravel.com for more information on Bon Voyage Travel's free showcase on March 3rd.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. I want to talk about one of our great sponsors, Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson. Go start your planning by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. You'll be tempted with so many outdoor activities, great places to stay, and great places to eat as well in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Again, southwestnewmexico.org. On our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, is Dr. Matt Hines, Pima County Supervisor, Democrat, representing the 2nd District. Before we get off medical affairs, Sarah sent me an email, Dr. Hines, during the break asking if I would please ask Dr. Hines how much the COVID vaccine mandates that he supported resulted in the staff shortages in Tucson healthcare. Any idea, any comment on that?
I can speak most specifically to my own facility. After Tucson Medical Center implemented, and again, they did this, they wanted to do this, but after they implemented a requirement for all physicians, nurses, and of course staff on site for the protection of all patients and ourselves to have a vaccination or a medical excuse as to why not, I believe we lost about 11 nurses out of over almost 4,000 employees at that particular facility. So it was not a significant impact whatsoever. And I would remind your listeners that there hasn't been a county-based mandate for masks or vaccination of any kind for employees or anyone else for going on 2 years now, in part due to state law changes. But yeah, that's not really an active consideration, in my opinion.
Sarah also added that her son was boarded and ER, 16-hour wait. So, boy, we sympathize certainly with
her. We
do,
and that's not the way it should be. And no. I'm sorry that she had to go through that, and that her son did as well.
All right. New funding to avoid street release of asylum seekers. Is there going to be enough funding in Pima County here going forward? Is this sustainable, Dr. Matt Hines?
You know, as long as the feds are reimbursing the county for any dollar spent, then, of course, I think I'm really proud of the program that Pima County has put forward to this point. We have avoided any kind of street releases, you know, certainly within the city of Tucson and the populated areas. But I think we're good through the end of March, I believe, is the last set of numbers and update that I have. Once we get to the end of March, due to some changes in the way the federal government is allowing for the reimbursement, there's some question as to whether or not we will be able to maintain this going forward. I certainly don't believe that Pima County taxpayers should be having to expend general fund dollars for a broken federal system that is disproportionately kind of on us, right? Because we happen to be a border county geographically. That's not fair, you know? So as long as we can, hopefully through our federal delegation, get that reimbursement, I think it makes a lot of sense for us to continue with the program we have in place, because it's been very, very effective. And I believe we are still the only border county that has avoided any kind of major street releases so far of all of the border counties in the United States on the southern border. But that will not be the case if there is no federal reimbursement for the funds that we are expending.
What are you looking for with the budget hearings that will be coming up very shortly as Ms. Lesher, Jan Lesher, puts together the budget for the new fiscal year, Dr. Hines?
You know, the thing that makes me the most concerned is I think we're doing pretty well, but I'm worried about the irresponsible actions of our legislature. And I was there a decade ago and watched them do that then. They just did it again. The flat tax they implemented, all these things are, as everyone warned them, causing, throwing kind of a wrench into things, massively decreasing state revenue from income and from income tax for sure. And these shortfalls are causing a statewide budget shortfall. And the Republican legislature has been for decades very interested in cost shifting these kinds of shortfalls due to their very irresponsible decisions onto the cities, towns, and counties. And that is, so I'm fine, leave us alone, let us do our thing. But I'm very, very sure there's going to be some way that the legislature is going to yet again try to take some funds from us or reduce funds we would be expecting from the state to help with this shortfall that they created due to their idiotic policies, frankly, which they knew this would happen. They just did it for short-term benefit so they could brag about yet another tax cut. And here we are screwing over the county residents all throughout the state, not just Pima County, Maricopa County, Coconino, everywhere.
What have you decided about your own reelection plans?
I filed my statement of interest, and we'll be collecting signatures, thankfully, online. Not now that that's available to county candidates. It was not back in 2020, as you know. And I'm looking forward to if the voters return me serving a second term.
What about the RTA Next program?
Oh, that's in some trouble. There's some disagreement there, and I'm very concerned about that. I've dedicated staff to monitoring it, and Pima County, we are one of nine jurisdictions there. I see the city of Tucson, two tribes, city of South Tucson. There's a state representative from HEDOT. We have a long way to go, and I'm most concerned representing District 2, which similar to District 5, which would be Chair Grijalva. We have some of the highest level, disproportionately high level of low-income folks. And any kind of sales tax like this being used potentially to, reduce expense for others in smaller outlying communities, shifting funds from folks who can't really afford it that well to pay for roads in areas where they have much higher means overall. I just generally, that troubles me. I feel like the RTA one, unfortunately, did a lot of that. RTA Next needs to not do that. So, and I don't know that there's going to be agreement, but I do think, we have Rex Scott, who is one of my colleagues. He is our representative to PAG RTA and is very, very interested in hearing the opinions of everyone, not just from his own District 1, but from all of our districts. So I would encourage folks to reach out, probably emails best, district1@pima.gov, so that our representative from the board to RTA can hear from people about priorities and things that they're concerned about as well in terms of where to put roads, where not to build roads. Should we include maintenance? Should we not? I really think we probably should, but that's still not included in RTA Next. So, and unfortunately, it's never enough time to go through these complicated issues, but it's in process. I hope something can be worked out, but City of Tucson has a lot of concerns, and I'm worried that politically speaking, without City of Tucson being in there and very, very pro, affirmative and actively campaigning for this, we may not get it to pass. The voters may not approve it, So we need to get a plan that everybody can get behind, and we need to do that pretty soon here.
Well, there has to be something really for everybody in it. People have to be enthusiasts. Say that I like that. There's got to be a piece
exactly for
everybody. That I think everybody can agree on that. All right, Dr. Hines, I know you're under a lot of stress with what's going on and at the hospital. So it's a difficult time for all healthcare professionals.
It is. Just remember for your listeners, if things are taking a long time, it's truly not, it's not optimal. None of us want that to be happening. But these are really great people. My colleagues, the nursing staff, the respiratory therapists, everyone, you know, from administrators to physicians, they're working really, really hard in a very, very flawed system that we all can collectively work to reform. But at the moment, just a little patience and understanding goes a long way.
All right. All right, Dr. Matt Hines, thank you. Thanks, Matt.
Of course. Have a good one.
All right.
Bye now.
I take a break right here. In fact, we'll be taking a break with the end of the show and back with you in about 23 hours, the Buckmaster Show. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and hope everybody has a great afternoon.